Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lowdown Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, Lakers Insider for Lakers Daily. Today on the show, the Lakers picked up a win against the Indiana Pacers. Probably didn't need to be that close. We'll talk about some of that. We'll talk about Spencer Dinwiddie playing for D'Angelo Russell and stepping in for D'Angelo Russell and playing well. Anthony Davis was incredible against Indiana, as he continues to kind of normally be. We got to talk about that fourth period where the Lakers, made us sweat through a game that we really didn't need to sweat through. So let's go ahead and get to all of that here in a second. Quick reminder, please do hit that subscribe button, whether you are watching live right now on YouTube. If you are watching live right now on Twitter, head on over to youtube.com/@LakersLounge. If you enjoy the stuff that we do here, tell a friend. People are looking for podcasts all the time. Drop us a good word, and let's see if we can keep this thing rolling. Let's start though with this game, the final. The Lakers beat the Indiana Pacers 150-145. This was not your grandfather's basketball. In this one, the guys who really kind of shined, Pascal Siakam just like could not be stopped. He was giving Rui a lot of real problems, so many problems it looks like Darvin went to Cam Reddish to finish that game. For the Lakers, Anthony Davis was incredible, 36 points, 16 boards, two steals, one block for the Lakers. Also, you had Spencer Dinwiddie go for 26 points on 8 of 11 shooting. Also had 5 assists. You had Austin Reeves go for 25 points and 8 assists on 6 of 13 from the field. You had Taurean Prince, I thought, played a couple good stretches in there. 14 points for him on 6 of 8 shooting in 19 minutes. Cam Reddish played 23 minutes. That was just frankly too many. On the Pacers side, I mentioned Siakam. I thought the game really kind of changed when TJ McConnell came in. He just always gives the Lakers problems. He's a high energy guard, and the Lakers guards don't tend to be very high energy. So you kind of give up a bit of a disadvantage there. For the most part, pretty balanced though elsewhere for the Pacers and the Lakers. They always kind of do this where they get lulled into this false sense of security and wind up going a little smaller than they need to. And it wound up biting the Lakers in the fourth quarter. For the most of the game, right, you had Indiana outscore the Lakers 36-30 in the first. You had the Lakers drop 42 points to Indiana's 32 in the second. And then the Lakers followed that up with a 44-point quarter in the third, to the Pacers 31 points. So you're going into the fourth quarter, you're like, okay, you can end this thing pretty quickly here. Instead, Darvin Ham decides he was going to sit he sat LeBron and AD in that fourth to start that fourth period. Indiana goes on a run, gets some momentum behind them, starts making everything. And now all of a sudden, you wind up with a game where the Lakers, I think, entered the fourth period with a comfortable 14-ish point lead. And then they wind up winning by only five. And some of it was crazy shot making from Indiana at the very end there. And some of it is kind of weird mismatches and odd transitions that the Lakers gave up there. Stu Lance wasn't thrilled with the way that the Lakers were defending the three down the stretch. And he was right. You're sitting here like, wait, what? Like, you know what they're trying to do here. Why is everybody in deep drops? So the Lakers looked really disorganized there at the end of the game, and Indiana took advantage and came way back on the Lakers there. The Lakers are 5 or 7 games above 500, not just for the first time this season, but for the first time in Austin Reeves's career. This is the highest above 500 he and the Lakers have ever been. So to a certain extent, you just kind of take what kind of outcome you can get here, especially not having D'Lo, who was scratched late with a non-COVID illness. But the thing here for the Lakers is like if we're willing to chalk up, if we're willing to at various points in the season give them moral victories, this one felt like a moral loss, right? Because you just don't have to give up that amount of points to a not very good team. And it was really annoying to see how the Lakers closed this one out, not just in terms of execution defensively, but also because of the decision making down the stretch. So we'll talk about that here in a second. I do have a comment here that I'm going to get to right off the top. So Mockman asks, where you been? I believe I told you guys that I was going on vacation. My friends and I do March Madness every year. I brought my mic with me, and had every intention of recording while I was out there. And the hotel that I was in didn't have a Wi-Fi capable of live streaming, and the hotel room that I was in had really poor lighting, and I just didn't figure that it would be good enough shows that you guys would enjoy. So I didn't want to cheap you guys out on those shows and took a couple days off. What I'm probably going to do here is make up for it in the coming days, in the coming weeks, with some extra content, you know, getting ready for the playoffs, getting ready for the play-in, all of that stuff. If you missed it, I did put together an article for Lakers Daily, kind of spelling out the situation as I know it to be with Gabe Vincent. Apparently he warmed up, and there is, according to some reports out there, some hope that Gabe is out there. I wrote last Friday that, or whenever it was that I was leaving, I think it was Wednesday, that I'm not hearing the same optimism, and that some people in the Lakers are a little confused why Gabe Vincent's agent is being so proactive when there isn't as much internal optimism with Gabe. But if you want to check that out again, you can find it on LakersDaily.com. But yeah, that has been the situation for the last few days. And let's go ahead and move on and get back to the reason we're here in the first place. All right, I'm going to go to the first super comment that we have here. Once I'm able to hide that one, here we go. The first super comment that we get comes from Brandon Oemeng, which means we get to play this thing. Fuck Boston! The comment from Brandon says, come play in / playoffs. I don't see Max, Cam, and Hayes getting any minutes. I don't think Darvin trusts Max or Hayes in big games. Yeah, certainly with Max. Like, I was on All Access Lakers today, and I'm not thrilled about the fact that Cam comes back and just immediately resumes his spot in the rotation from Max. I think Max is a better basketball player than Cam. It was funny. I tweeted out late in the game. I said I don't get Cam Reddish finishing this game, whether it's over Rui, whether it's over Max, whether it's over Taurean even. I just didn't understand the decision there. I know Darvin was trying to kind of match up the minutes with Cam and Halliburton. I thought Dinwiddie was actually doing just fine guarding Halliburton. So you don't need to have Max out there or Cam out there. The Lakers really struggled with the physicality, with the way that Pascal Siakam kind of operates. Rui didn't have the best game. LeBron was pretty frustrated with him throughout. There was a few plays there where Rui got cut in, you know, like across his chest and lost his guy, and it hurt the Lakers in that way. So I, you know, if you're just looking at the way that Rui played, maybe you can explain it there. But I think once again, it's Darvin looking for any reason whatsoever to not play the Lakers' best guys. In this case, Cam goes out there, and you watch the end of that game. He lost Miles Turner on a three. He gave up offensive rebounds. He did have the steal late when Indiana was scrambling and wasn't looking to score at the basket. They were just trying to get threes up and eventually make a bad pass that he steps in front of. So he gets credit for that. But I really don't understand the Cam thing. I haven't understood it basically since the first few weeks of the season. And since then, he hasn't played anywhere near the kind of basketball or defense that he needs to play to make up for what he gives up offensively. He's just a terrible offensive basketball player, and I don't need to continue to watch him play. Brandon follows that up with this one. Fuck Boston! How would a lineup of D'Lo, Vando, Braun, Rui, and AD do against the Nuggets? Vando slash Murray, Vando on Murray, D'Lo on KCP, Braun on Porter, AD on Gordon, Rui on Jokic. I don't know. The thing with Jokic that, like, I don't think people give him quite enough credit for, you can have a little success against him with, you know, occasional ploy, a curveball here, whatever. But eventually he's going to figure it out. And the last time that the Lakers played the Nuggets, it was really clear that he had figured out how to play against Rui. And I don't know that the Lakers would be able to go to that as much in a playoff series. And then if you don't have Rui on him, you know, I guess you could have Rui on Gordon, or you can have him on Porter. Can't quite have him on Porter because he doesn't have the foot speed there. I don't like having Braun on Porter either, because Braun loses shooters, and Porter, if he gets loose, is pretty much automatic at this point. So I don't know how that lineup would really match up against Denver, but I also don't know how many lineups the Lakers have that I would look at and say, like, that's an even okay matchup. It's just a bad matchup. Denver's the best team in the league for my money. And they match up especially poorly with the Lakers because they can outbully the Lakers basically everywhere. And the Lakers' advantage that they tend to have when they look their best is physicality and size and athleticism. And Denver doesn't really allow them to have those advantages. And those advantages actually turn into disadvantages. And that's, I think, where the Lakers really struggle. So I don't like how... how that would go for the Lakers. But I don't know how many better options that the Lakers are technically going to have. Let's go ahead and get back to this one though. Man, the other thing too, like, I'm going to be frank too. We stay at South Point, and I don't think South Point is a sponsor. I certainly hope so. I hope not, because that is one of the worst hotels that is currently in existence. There's just no cigarette filtration. So now I'm going to sound like this for the next week or so. And there's terrible Wi-Fi and all those things. So if I go back there again next year, or if I go back to Vegas next year, I will not be staying at South Point because it doesn't let me get any of the things that I need to get done. All right, let's go back to this game though. And I want to talk about Spencer Dinwiddie, who played really, really well. I thought, I actually, you know, you kind of split this game up into two halves. It was pretty clear. Dinwiddie got the Lakers going in the first half, and then Austin was on the ball more in the second half. Dinwiddie, you know, did what he does when he's on the ball. very good at piercing the defense and getting into the paint. And whether it was finishing for himself, it was a lot more finishing for himself than kicking the ball out and facilitating when he got into the paint. But still, a very, very, very good game for him. And, you know, the Lakers really tend to struggle when D'Lo isn't available because it puts a lot of wear and tear on the second units. And in this one, the second units looked better than they have in other previous D'Lo absences. I think that had a lot to do with Dinwiddie as well. The other thing, too, that I kind of alluded to earlier, Dinwiddie played really well defensively on Halliburton. You look at what he finished, and Halliburton's numbers are somewhat inflated because of what he did late in the game. But 33 minutes for Halliburton, 5 of 13 from the field, only 2 of 6 from three-point range, had 6 boards, had those 10 assists, 2 steals, only 12 points for him, was a minus 12 in the game. TJ McConnell was a plus 7 in the game. That feels noteworthy there. And, you know, I think Cam Plate was guarding him for some stretches. I think Max got a couple of opportunities on him as well. But I actually think in terms of player who guarded Halliburton and then also was productive on the other end of the court, Dinwiddie played. That's one of the better games I think he's going to play as a Laker. Maybe the best. He's played certainly to this point, and you know, he really kind of showcased some of the stuff that he can do defensively. I always kind of laughed when he first got to the Lakers. I didn't think it looked to me, because he wasn't a terrible defender earlier in his career. He was actually okay. He's a longer guard, pretty shifty too. So like, you know, and then he gets to Brooklyn. And it's pretty clear that they aren't really stressing defensive principles there. Went through a few head coaches as well. And I thought when he got to the Lakers this year, he was trying to play defense, but like didn't have the defensive rhythm. And that's why he was getting into so much foul trouble lately. And certainly tonight, I thought he did a very good job defending Halliburton's play has kind of fallen off of a cliff since the All-Star break. But I thought he played really well out there on Halliburton. Halliburton wasn't really a factor for the vast majority of the game. And when he was a factor, it was when he and Andrew Nembhard were taking turns kind of picking on LeBron and Reeves in the pick and roll and hoping to get those guys in a deep drop and then shooting over the top of that pick and roll. And, you know, that's not something that Dinwiddie can control. So I thought, you know, overall, a fantastic game here from Dinwiddie, and it's good enough that I do think, you know, I wrote about this for Lakers Daily, but I think Dinwiddie played and has played well enough here that I legitimately do not know where Gabe Vincent's minutes are going to come from, because I don't want a 4 small guard rotation. And I know Dinwiddie is a little bigger. He's 6'5", he's long and all of those things. But he's a point guard, you know, he thinks like a point guard, and he's slight of frame as well. And then you have D'Lo, who is, you know, 6'5", also long arms, but he's not a physical presence out there. Pretty slow footed by point guard standards. Reeves is not a defensive presence. Gabe is probably of those 4 guys, one of their better defenders, but he's also missed so much time this year that I don't need to see him in the rotation. And I frankly don't know where that fits in. And I think that's kind of why his agent is has been as active as he's been. I think his client has kind of looked at the situation too, and is maybe kind of like pushing and poking and prodding like, hey, what can we do here to remind them that I might be available? Because I don't think there are minutes that exist for Gabe Vincent. And that's why you see such different messaging earlier this week, where you had Bill Ryder of CBS Sports say that Wood, Vanderbilt, and Gabe are not expected to come back this year. And then shortly thereafter, you have Mark Stein go on the record and report that he's hearing that there is optimism that Gabe Vincent is going to come back. And then so I did my digging, and I basically what I essentially found was people close to the Lakers don't anticipate Gabe Vincent coming back, not just because of where he's at physically, but also because of the opportunity. And then on top of that, essentially Gabe's camp and specifically his agent is kind of running around talking to anybody he can, saying like, no, he's coming back. He's coming back. We think he's coming back. It leads to a situation here where those two sides clearly aren't on the same page. But I still don't, I don't necessarily anticipate Gabe Vincent coming back. I don't see the opportunity should he come back. And it's especially because over the last, I would say, since he basically got to the Lakers, Spencer's been like legitimately improving at every turn. His plus minus always looks among the better ones on the Lakers. I think it's because of the combination. Like he's the closest thing that the Lakers really have to a two-way player on the perimeter right now. It's kind of sad to say. It's not great that somebody that you picked up kind of miraculously after the trade deadline is that for you. But when you combine what he can do on the perimeter as a defender, and then you combine that with his on-ball chops, I wish he was knocking down more shots. If he was, you can make a real argument. He's been playing some of the better basketball of almost any guard, and maybe made a case for himself to be in some closing lineups occasionally. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what this looks like. But all of the credit in the world goes to him tonight on a game that the Lakers can't afford to lose. I know that the Warriors are kind of slipping, but the Rockets are coming up, and the Lakers, I do think, still have some ambitions of potentially jumping back up into that group of, slightly above them, Sacramento, Dallas, and Phoenix, where I think they would like to be able to jump up there and maybe play one fewer play-in game. I know that, as it stands right now, Denver is the top seed in the league. Now, Denver needs OKC to lose two more games, technically speaking, because of, tiebreakers and stuff like that. But whatever it takes, like for the Lakers to avoid Denver in that first round, I think that's something that I would love them to focus on. I know that LeBron said after their game against Atlanta that they don't care about seeding. And I know that Anthony Davis has said that before. That's what these guys are always going to say, is that they're always going to believe in themselves over whoever they're playing. But the seeding does matter, if you're the 10 seed, you have to play two road games to get into the playoffs. And then you're doing that to play the number one seed in the conference. If you're the 9 seed, you get a home game in that first one. You still do have to win twice to get into the playoffs. And your second one is going to be a road game, but that's still, that getting to play one home game instead of a road game is a big advantage there. If you are the 8 seed, you only have to win one game to move on and get into the playoffs. And yeah, in the 8 seed, you're playing that game on the road. So that makes it somewhat more difficult, but it's nice to not be in that one game setting for one extra opportunity. And then obviously with the 7 seed, if you're sitting there, 7 seed. If you're sitting there, then you get to win one home game to play potentially the 2 seed instead of the 1 seed. So, I think the Lakers would like to continue to climb. I know that probably mean like one of the kind of sub meanings indirect messages there is like, we just got to play our best basketball and see where we wind up. And that is a good approach to this too. I don't think the Lakers would like intentionally lose to not have to face somebody else or something like that. But that said, like as you rack up those wins and as you look ahead to your schedule, as you try to contend and catch up to some of these teams that are ahead of you, this is the kind of game that you can't afford to lose, especially given the situation that you were in heading into the playoff or heading into the fourth quarter. So, you know, they make you sweat a little bit, and then they make you, you know, I didn't like how that game ended. Stu Lance didn't like how that game ended, but you know what? You take care of the business that you can and you move on. And this is one that you absolutely had to win. And you do not win this game without Spencer Dinwiddie, flat out. Does not happen. You also do not lose. Or you do not win this game without Anthony Davis, who from the very beginning of this game and throughout the game was just ripping poor Miles Turner to shreds. It was just, there was nothing that Indiana had to try to stop him. You had Obi Toppin out there giving it a go. He was terrible too on him. Jalen Smith and Isaiah Jackson occasionally were guarding him. It's just a very small team in Indiana. And this is a team that's the type of team that Anthony Davis really plays well against. He had a couple dunks in traffic that, you know, always kind of indicate to me, okay, he's got it going. And then he allowed that to kind of roll into some of the rhythm that he was shooting the ball with on the perimeter. It was, and then, you know, defensively was just incredible again. And, you know, grabbing all those boards, he had some timely steals, some timely blocks. He's just, you know, when he plays like that, the Lakers are just really difficult to beat. And they tend to normally blow teams out. And they would have blown this team out had they focused throughout the entirety of the game, or if Darvin Ham used timeouts to occasionally tell them, you know, hey, we need to change this strategy here or whatever, and not, hey, we need you guys to keep running faster. Or if Darvin just played their best players, that would also help, you know, allow for some blowouts as well. But yeah, we can't take that type of an effort from Anthony Davis for granted. It was a great game and a game that the Lakers absolutely needed. So kudos to him for that. The last thing here that I want to talk about is the defense. And you give up 145 points to, yeah, a team that likes to score. They like to, they almost sometimes looks like they're allowing the other team to score to kind of, you know, lure them into a false sense of security, because they just want to outscore you in some way or another. But you give up 145 points to an Indiana team that has looked pretty listless. You know, they have some tough injuries. Ben Mathurin is hurt, right? And I don't think Halliburton is healthy. He did not look very explosive at all out there. He just looks like he's completely lost the joy in the game, and it's kind of a bummer to watch. I mean, I'm not complaining tonight because I don't need Halliburton going off against the Lakers in a game that the Lakers really needed, but it was just, it's not a team that is talented enough that you should give up 145 points to. And whether it's strategic and schematic, whether it's personnel, whether it's effort and engagement, this was those games that, like, you kind of have to have a little bit more pride in, and giving up 145 points, it just doesn't speak very well to, you know, how serious the Lakers are taking these things. And, you know, yeah, you have them talking about, we don't care about seeding and we don't care about this and we don't care about that. Maybe care, right? Like, this reminds me, and I've used this analogy before, of like when I was in grade school and my parents still had access to my grades, I would be like, yeah, I got like a B minus on this thing and I didn't even study. Ha ha. You know, and my dad's response was always like, okay, but like, if you studied, you would have gotten a better grade. And that's the whole point. And like with this Lakers, it was like, yeah, we didn't play any defense and we won. And you know, we still were able to win. We scored 150 points. Like, okay, but you do need to play defense. That's an important side of the ball that you need to be okay in. And I thought it was a pretty poor effort and strategy that the Lakers were utilizing all game long, where it's you're so deep into the season for it to look like, you know, really clearly like nobody understood what the point was, what the assignment was out there defensively. So that needs to improve. Kind of doubt it will at this point of the season. And some of it is personnel, right? Vanderbilt is obviously really going to help your defense there. But you can't, like, keep on pinning your defensive issues on not having Jared Vanderbilt. You can't do that. You can't keep doing that where it's just, you know, you need better. You need better from that. You know, you won. It's great. But you need to be a little bit better than that when you're looking ahead to the other teams that you're going to be playing against who are just as capable of scoring like this, but also can, like, occasionally get a stop as well. Those are the teams that you know, I'm a little nervous about playing moving forward. All right. That is, I believe, going to do it here for this episode. A slightly shorter episode here of the Lowdown as I try to get what little I can from my voice, my post-Vegas voice. We have some fun guests lined up for this week I'm looking forward to talking to this week. I'm not going to give away who they are because that is a karmic no-no. So I'm going ahead and end this thing here. Please do hit that subscribe button. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your enemies. I don't care. Like, just start bragging about this Lakers Lounge thing so we can keep it growing. If you're listening live, watching live, please hit that subscribe button. If you are watching live on Twitter, youtube.com/@LakersLounge is where you can find us. So you can subscribe to us that way. And we will keep this thing rolling along as we aren't heading into the home stretch. This is the home stretch. We are here. All of these games mean a lot. And, you know, you pick up a good win here. Let's keep this thing rolling through the end of the season. So until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin saying have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you next time.